Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Lofi, alongside the star of the show, Mr. Joe Aitken, here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, happy spring. How's it feel to be the star?
You make me laugh when you say that. You know, it's hard to be a star when you're, you know, the people that you interview on the podcast are really the stars.
That's true.
And it's hard to be a star when you're humble. You know, I don't think of myself. I think you more of the star than me. But
we're all in this constellation together, man.
Yeah, we're out there floating around. Everybody's got a sparkle. I know you and I have been working hard to keep it going on the podcast. I think we're doing a great job. And it's been amazing. I still love the industry and still love chatting trees with you there, Corey.
Yeah, and it's funny because the more people that we run across in our line of work and what we do, the more I realize that we're just scratching the surface on not only potential topics, but also potential perspectives on what we're doing and what tree professionals are doing. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'll add on that. You're right. You're right. You and I get an opportunity to meet so many great people. And I had a good conversation with Mr. Joe DiCola today, who's the head of research for us. And I had a question for him, and it was, we need to rewrite the book on how we care for evergreens. And he's like, why? And I says, well, because we're missing basic elements in consulting and skipping right to insects and disease sprays. And I think he summed it up. There is environmental change, and a lot of this is abiotic. And I think we skip past it. So I think we're going to do that. So yeah, when you say scratching the tip of the iceberg, I think you're right. There's so much more we can learn and do. And
well, and there's a guy right there, Joe DiCola. A lot of people who don't work with ArborJet or maybe don't get to attend the conferences that we do, they don't understand what that gentleman has done for the industry. I mean, he with a team put together the product Triage, which is one of the industry's biggest insecticides right now. So we should have him on.
Well, we should. We got to work up to a guy like that. We got to get him quick because he's got one foot out the door ready to retire. So we got to get him quick. But in the interim, I like speaking with getting to talk with some great arborists. I think we got a great one on tonight. So let's, you and I quit bantering and let's bring our guest on. And Corey, why don't you introduce him and bring him on. Let's chat trees.
Sure. So the first time I met this individual was at a climbing competition. I believe it was somewhere in, obviously it was somewhere in Utah, probably around 2016, maybe 2017. And this gentleman was still competing and beating a lot of the younger crowd. So without further ado, I want to bring on Mark from Utah. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being on. Well, tell us a little bit about that. How long you been in the industry? How long you been kicking butt for? where'd you get your start, most importantly?
Okay, well, I've been in the industry for about 30 years, you know, in one form or the other. And the short version of where I got my start, I studied landscape architecture and ornamental horticulture at Utah State University. And when I graduated, surprisingly, the job offers didn't really come in. I was trying to figure out what to do with my life, like a lot of us. And I still feel like I'm in that situation, work in progress. But I got married and we decided to move to Oregon and attend Oregon State and study forestry. And while I was there, I worked for a great company, Lim Walker Tree Care Company in Corvallis, Oregon, and worked for a guy that I consider my mentor, Rand Irway, and that really got the ball rolling for me.
Your mentor was Rand?
Yes. Do you know Rand?
I know of Rand.
He's kind of a legend.
Yes. Wow, heavy is the crown.
I bet he is, but it's funny, on the east side of the Mississippi, you know, we got our own legends, but no, that's a great. So how old were you when you moved out there? So it was after?
After I graduated, I was probably 28 years old. So I had had my own little landscape and tree business while I was in college, just trying to figure it out on my own. But I really didn't feel like I advanced until I went to Oregon and started working for Rand.
Wow. And they have some pretty big trees out there.
Oh, massive. Yeah. You know, working in Utah, we have a lot of nice trees, but when you go East Coast, West Coast, it's a whole different situation.
Yeah. Did you ever meet Jerry Baranek?
Jerry? No, I did not, but I bought his book and I read his book, and he was quite an inspiration. Amazing guy.
Yeah. Cause I was out there. We talk about, and we'll hopefully we'll get a couple of your favorites, but I had a chance to go out to Northern California and climb the redwoods and sequoias.
Oh, I'm jealous.
And he came out and visited us. And it was funny because he come out and hung with us for the day, but then he went to his van. He brought all his books out. And he sat out there with us after we climbed for the day and signed the books and gave us all sets of his books.
So, that's amazing. A wealth of knowledge for his career.
And he was kind of chuckling at us. And he was like, oh, yeah, I did that in the 70s. I'm like, well, shoot, nobody was thinking about half the stuff in the 70s that he was designing and manufacturing. And some of the stuff that he had to do and the size of those trees is just, it's incredible. It really is.
It is the level of innovation that he had with, I mean, now we look back and feel like that is really primitive equipment compared to the modern gear that we have. And he got it done.
Done safely. And he's still with us.
Yeah. Incredible.
Well, yeah. So Mark, what was kind of your next step from there?
Went to Oregon State for a quarter, had some great classes and learned a lot. But in the process, I realized that I like being an arborist better than I like being a student, even though I love to learn.
Sure.
And so I got to thinking, you know, I'd like to start my own company, do my own thing, and hopefully earn enough money to support a family and eventually buy a house. And so we worked for Rand. Then we went to the Boise, Idaho for an area, worked for a couple of companies. And then 23 years ago, came back to Utah and set up my former company, Total Tree Care.
Wow. And you did that having worked for a bunch of other people. You weren't, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people get into it because they think, oh, I've climbed for, you know, 6 months, or I've climbed for a year. I can do my own thing. I'm ready to go off my own. So you actually got to learn from watching and working with some production companies, which I think is a huge benefit.
Oh, it changed my life, because when I came to Oregon, you know, I was a certified arborist by then. I had my own primitive climbing gear and thought I was a pretty good arborist. And I quickly learned working for Rand that I didn't know very much. My skill set was quite limited. And it was humbling, because in a tree care company, I mean, bottom line, it's about the money. You have to make money to be successful. And if you're not a very good climber, you end up dragging brush, which everyone has to do it, but it wasn't my favorite thing to do. I'd rather be up in the trees. And it was super motivating to learn and improve so I could be the one called on to do the climbing. So, yeah, very helpful.
Oh, that's a huge process.
And yes.
I don't think, you know, there's a lot of guys that bail on this industry before they get the opportunity, because don't get me wrong, back when you and I started, I've been doing it almost 40. You know, there wasn't the mini lifts. There wasn't mechanized. You, man, you humped logs out. You bucked them up, put them on a ball cart, and you rolled them.
What's a ball cart?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Exactly. So back in the, you know, and now they've really created an environment where climbing trees is, it's a lifestyle. It's a, I don't know if I want to say sexy, but you know what I mean? I mean, it's just really appealing the way they've created the environment, they're climbing. Oh my God, it's amazing.
Oh, you're totally right. It's an image.
They bail on it because they had to sweat a little bit. Man, you got to get your street cred. You got to drag brush and run ropes before you can ascend into the tree and be safe and be a good arborist.
It's a process.
See, I think you're right. You have to pay your dues. Mm-hmm. And before you earn the right to get up there and be in the trees.
Because it's not just, when you're up there, it's not just your life. It's the guy underneath you's life too. So
oh, yeah,
the respect of not only the owner of the company, your fellow employees, your teammates on the crew, before you go up there and start slaying trees, they call it. yeah, they got there's a big trust factor right there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, and as an employer and a team leader, Mark, as you've had your own company, and as you've worked with so many up and coming climbers and you know future hopefully arborists, what are some of the intricacies with that? How do you communicate the message that Joe and I are trying to say here, where it's not an overnight, you know, ground to crown, it's a process, and it's you check these boxes before you get up there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've worked with so many employees over the years, amazing people. But some people, they just come with a mentality of being able to learn and progress and be an elite climber, where others, they top out at being mediocre. And so it's kind of a trial and error process. And one of the more gratifying parts of my career is seeing someone and they're like a piece of clay. They can barely tie their shoes, and in a process of years, see them become exceptional climbers. And just a quick story. I hired an employee. He was trying to figure out what to do at the university, and he was in engineering, and then he was in accounting, didn't know what he wanted, but he came to work for me. And we have a practice tree that we practice on for the climbing competition because we really like it.
Oh, yeah.
And so his first round, it took him 15 minutes and he struggled and he was all over the place and clumsy. And last year in 2022, he won the Utah tree climbing competition and went and competed in Denmark.
Yeah.
And that is a very proud moment to bring someone up like that.
What's his name?
His name is Kevin Tolman.
That's awesome. I know that and I know him.
Yeah.
What a good dude. And what a benefit though to have a mentor like you that can walk you through that process appropriately, you know. There's so many and it's changing so much. The industry's changing every year. There's something new in the catalog. So props
to that. Yeah. Yeah, and it's fun to see all the new gear and the innovation, and that it's an exciting time to be in the industry and exciting to come where I did with an Arborplex rope and a rope snap that literally was my climbing system and a tautline hitch, and we still got it done, to see all the innovations in the last 30 years. It's awesome.
You know, you can go back 130 years, Mark, and you know, I think it was F.A. Bartlett was the first one to use ropes in trees because he was tired of his guys falling out of trees.
Yeah.
But, well, the early climbing systems, or I shouldn't say systems, saddles in the Manila rope and all that, we're still doing the same thing, but with different technology materials.
Yeah.
Think about it. I know we're the SRS, you know, a lot of guys are going to single rope systems and mountain climbing gears made it into arborculture. I think that's, I don't know if it makes it any safer. I haven't seen any statistics one way or the other, but sure makes it easier ascending into the tree. I'll tell you that. Especially
that's for sure.
Oh, so ergonomics is changed a lot. Then, do you remember having to hip thrust up everything?
Oh yeah, I still do, but I have other options now that are a lot better.
Feet to the next lead, but to send 50, 60 feet up in the air and hip thrust all the way to the first branch is not fun.
Oh no. Or if you're, you know, if you're trying to be a tough guy about it, to hand over hand to get up the tree, you know, just pull yourself up the rope.
Yep. Done that back. Yeah, long time.
But that's not sustainable. And, you know, maybe for a tree or a tree a day, but you're looking at 20 something years of climbing.
Yeah.
That's not sustainable. I mean, even the saddles these days, it's so much better for you. The ergonomics, like Joe was saying, I mean, everything's been designed and tweaked with intentions of making it more sustainable on your body.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice because you can, in theory, you can extend your career and without wrecking your shoulders, your elbows, and also get more done in a day.
Production.
Production. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the bottom line.
Well, that's interesting you say this, and I really want to hear more about kind of how your outlook on business, having started a business, run a business, and then sold it or moved on to the next step. If you think about it, so many people are so short-sighted as it relates to that. Oh, I climbed for a year for this company. I'm good to go on my own. But then they don't have any plan on how they can increase production, and is it sustainable? What does it look like in the long run? So how did you approach that? What was your journey doing that process?
Well, I don't know. That's a little tricky for me to ask. So if I get off, you can redirect me. But with climbing and efficiency, and that's how my mind works a lot, I would have these employees, and we would come in and they'd learn to climb. And I would always encourage my employees, go to the climbing competition. I'll pay your entry. I'll encourage you, just get involved, because being involved will improve you as a climber.
Oh yeah.
And so we set up a practice tree that we still use with flags and working through the stations. And so we could gauge the effectiveness of a climber, that ultimately they're competing against themselves, and they have this mindset of, how can I climb faster? How can I be more efficient or ergonomic? And so we had that mindset in our company, and it was successful. And we've always had a good reputation as some of the best climbers in the area.
Invest in your team, and your team will do the best they can for you.
Absolutely. And my business approach is probably different than a lot of people, because we live in a university town. And so you're looking for employees. When I was in college, I hired my roommates and neighbors. And so I always hired college students, and they're eager, intelligent, willing to learn, but I knew they wouldn't stick around. But it worked for us because we always had a labor force.
Is there an urban forestry program at the university in the town you serve?
There's a horticulture program and a forestry program, but not an urban forestry program. But if there is a program, I guess I am it, because I teach arboriculture at the university now.
Well, so that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's fun working with the students, hopefully trying to inspire them and help them choose a career in arboriculture.
Okay. Now, before we move on to the future, let me ask you a question. Now, you've been in business almost, 30 years?
More or less, yes.
Ish. where does plant healthcare fell within them 30 years?
That's a hard question, because I believe in plant healthcare absolutely as a component of arboriculture. And Corey knows this. I have leaned on him in the past for information where my knowledge and experience is lacking. I can ask Corey to fill me in. And so, yeah, it's a huge component of arboriculture. And, to have the complete package, we need to have a wide view on with plant healthcare, climbing, pruning, soils and water, all of it.
So I didn't mean to put you on a spot, but you were successful with one side of arboriculture, and you did have avenues to lean on for assistance of your customers or your clients' trees.
Absolutely.
And I bring that up because as I aged, it was getting harder and harder to climb, and my shoulders are shot and my back. I always leaned on the science side and the plant healthcare side. Don't mean that I can move any easier right now, but
right.
I got, like, you got hooked on ascending into these magnificent living organisms. I learned to love and appreciate how to care for them.
And I think that's awesome to have a niche that can become a passion.
Yeah, it is. You listen to, I speak for myself, but I hear Corey too. Corey, we tease ourselves to call ourselves tree nerds, but you can hear the passion in Corey's voice too when we talk about the industry in whole. You know, don't get me wrong, Corey was a climber too, and so was I. But we switched, I don't want to say the other side, but
well, I wasn't
a different side of arboriculture culture, I guess.
I wasn't a good enough climber. I could do it, and that's why I always get such a kick out of listening to, you know, Joe and people like Mark talk about kind of the progression of it. And well, we see I'm sorry, Mark.
No, I was just going to say, but maybe it's because I wasn't good at plant health care. That's why I'm a climber. There's a flip side.
But and as a business, though, in the last, you know, couple of years of the business, certainly a couple, maybe even more, you started to recognize that value that I think a lot of people go their entire careers without ever seeing. And when we asked you about, you know, kind of your outlook, you talked about soil. You talked about pruning out diseased tissue. I mean, that's tree care, soil, proper irrigation, air knife, air spade. I mean, these are big picture things that you got to put together while trying to grow a business, while keeping people safe and generating incomes for their families. I mean, that's a lot.
It is a lot, and it's overwhelming. The plus side is it's very interesting because there's so many niches that you can dive into. It's never boring.
Oh. And do you do woodworking as well?
I do. I used to own a sawmill and a lot of urban wood in my house. And that's been a big part of my life.
I remember having, you had me over in the earlier years, you know, probably 8, 10 years ago, whatever it was now. And you had the coolest, it was either a counter or a table, but it was like live edge. And I don't know what it's called, but you somehow made it come down. It was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a live edge. I forget the name of it, but it's a slab walnut table of a big walnut tree that I cut down.
I remember that from,
Yeah, see, now you're talking my language because I have a portable sawmill.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'm going to turn my camera around. I know the audience can't see it, but you guys can.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow, Joe.
Since that's a mill, we milled up a bunch of maple for a project I have going at my house that is going to be a more of a lap siding on the inside of my post and beam addition to my house. And it had beetles in it. So it's got staining.
Blue staining.
Yeah. And once I sand that and oil it, it's going to be absolutely gorgeous. So I know what you took me down. We talk about passions, you know, urban wood reutilization is getting big and reutilizing trees that have to come down is, I don't think we claim it as part of arboriculture as well as we should, because there's not a lot of tree care companies. They'll do firewood, but there's not a lot that will get into the artisan side of it and creating something with that tree that had to come down for whatever purpose. Well, that's a whole show right there, I think, Corey.
Oh, I think you could come up with multiple shows on that subject. I have a lot to say on it. And I think it's an underutilized avenue of the industry where we should be using urban wood a lot more than we are.
Yes. Yes. And I'll show you, there's one more passion while we're talking. No, I'm very involved with Michigan State University. So as we spin around, you can see the saw rack, that two-man buck saw that is in the rack, is actually Michigan State University's forestry club saw for the conclave.
Oh, that's awesome.
They couldn't get it to cut up their way out of a wet paper bag. So I got it on the rack and I was miking it up and everything. And they had it so jacked up that I almost got it dialed in. And I did a single buck with it the other day because I got a real nice log rack. And in a 12-inch poplar, it was still green. It was still pretty heavy and wet. 10, 12 seconds through it.
Jeez. Oh, that's amazing. I need to have you sharpen my crosscut saws.
Oh my God. And I'm learning how to get it faster. So it's staying involved in this industry, finding little niches like that within your day-to-day really fuels your passion to keep getting up and doing it.
Oh, I agree. I was talking to my son earlier, and he said, once you're in the tree business, it permeates every aspect of your life, whether it's woodworking or growing fruit or climbing or all of it.
You're absolutely right. Once it's in your blood, and I think, and Corey and I had a podcast before, you know, are you destined for this industry? And I think there is something unexplainable when you meet somebody in the industry that has that passion or that glare and that sparkle in their eye, you know, it got them. And you know, he's probably going to be in it for a long time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've seen so many people, and it's so rewarding to see it clicks with them, and they're jumping into all the different avenues, and you know, they should have a great career ahead of them.
Yeah. So, the guy's like, hey, I'll do it. No, easy grasshopper, slow down.
So Mark, as you're yeah. finding those people, and they're out there, the next generation, the future arborist is out there. As you're finding sure. these people in this generation, what's some advice that you could give them, or what direction do you think you could point them towards? Because we do have a lot of listeners, some that are super seasoned, others that are just dabbling. They're just trying to get in. So where would you point them?
The thing that I've seen with companies or individuals that are successful and that enjoy it is find some part of the industry that you're passionate about and dive into it and learn as much as possible, but also get involved. I get involved with the ISA or the TCIA, go to climbing competitions, go to conferences, get to know other like-minded folks and have that community. But the thing that's exciting, but also depressing for me, is the more I get into it, the more I realize what I don't know.
Yes.
But it keeps it exciting. And the people that make a good go of it are the ones that are learning and excited, and the ones that burn out, they just stop trying. They stop learning.
Well said.
Goosebumps, man. Great advice. I think you're right. And Corey and I are both like-minded. We're always trying to not be complacent. There's got to be a better way to do it. Why does it do that?
Yes.
Tell them a story real quick while we're wrapping up about your student on the ski lift and how his question to you from a young 13, 14-year-old young man was incredible. So I'll let Corey say this real quick, but that's the kind of the mindset that this, not only just in the green industry and tree industry, the world needs. So tell them real quick what the story was about.
Yeah. So one of my lessons or one of my students that showed up for practice that week, riding up the chairlift, and it was cold. And we were talking about kind of the freeze and thaw, and how when things freeze, they expand. And, you know, he had a water bottle that, you know, he was thinking about, and it expanded and it cracked and the top came off. But he wanted to know, if trees are full of water, why don't trees expand and explode? And we actually walked through this on a past episode, probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago. But it was so cool. And, you know, Joe and I, maybe Joe, has affected a lot more lives than what I have. But in that moment, it was real, because all of a sudden either a light bulb went on, or just kind of like you said, once you get into the tree world, every other aspect of life kind of falls into place and surrounds it. Now Eric is looking up at trees going, okay, all right, okay.
I get it. Yeah. That was just a brilliant question from a young mind. And I think it's amazing. And like I said, that's one of the reasons we started the podcast, was to raise the bar and maybe, I don't know, spark something. Shoot.
Absolutely. Just having the discussion gets wheels turning in your head.
Absolutely. Hey, Mark, is there anything else as we're wrapping up that you want to leave either your impact or anything else you want to say to the listeners before we sign off?
Yeah. Just one quick thing. If I feel like I've made any kind of impact in the industry, it has been able to bring employees through the ranks and teach them and bring them something that inspired them and brought them a career that they could go on to and support their families and have something that's meaningful and improve the industry. So that's, I guess that's my parting words. It feels love good it. To be an influence.
Love it.
Nice. Well, Mark, I will thank you genuinely and sincerely for being on the podcast and for leaving the impact on the industry that you have. And I look forward to seeing the next generation that you produce from your time at the university.
All right. Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay. You bet.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.